This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Beat me up on the mamas of all mama shit.
Hey, I'm looking through my telescope and I see a mothership. Is that you? Beam me up.
Hey, DA, I'm thirsty, man. Can you beam me up for a cold one?
Hey, DA, what's going on, baby? Stop me off and beam me up.
DA, what's the dealio? Permission to get in that mothership.
Is my window seat still available? Beam me up.
What's going on, DA? Hey, man, I need you to do me a huge favor. My coworker's a jerk. Oh, just beam me up, man.
Get beamed up. Everyone else has. It's DA on CBS Sports Radio.
And we come to you live from the Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans studio. Rocket Mortgage with you every step of the way to provide a seamless mortgage experience. Coming up this hour on the show, do you need playing experience to coach in March Madness? A fascinating list compiled about the playing careers of all 68 coaches in the NCAA tournament. We'll do that coming up here in about 17 minutes from now. And then at the end of the hour, we've got soundcheck, including Joni Mack from Friday, addressing the national rumors of the Mack attack and the wet sneeze. I was off last week, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. Joni Mack was in. We didn't know how familiar Joni Mack was with the Joni Mack Mack attack montage. But it appears like you guys really let the cat out of the bag on Twitter by continuing to tag him in tweets about wet sneezes. And so on Friday, he addressed it. Now, this is interesting because I was out, didn't get to hear it. Mraz was out. He didn't hear it originally. Bilotti was in, but Bilotti has lost his voice this week, so he can't actually communicate with us. It's very difficult because Bilotti has all of this knowledge inside his cranium and we can't access it.
Ironically, Bilotti may have gotten the Joni Mack flu from working with Joni Mack.
So it's been a tough week around here. I give Bilotti a lot of credit. He's been soldiering through. This has been his Jordan flu games this entire week. In fact, he's been so laid up, Mraz had to go teach his class at St. John's University last night for him.
How scary is that?
Terrifying.
I didn't even know what I was saying.
Now, this is your second or third time speaking to the class?
Third time. At what point do I start charging Pete? Can't even get a slice of pizza from the guy.
So coming up here as part of soundcheck.
By the way, I also had one of his students yesterday tell me he had to unfollow me on Twitter.
Is that right?
So I the kids don't even respect me before I walk in there.
What did you tweet that made him unfollow you?
He said he doesn't remember. He said he followed me a couple weeks ago. He lasted about a day following me and had to get out. Was honest with me, right to my face. So I'm just going to tell you, I basically don't respect you.
Hey, those are for hooves. They're for the hooves. All the hooves over out there. All them hooves. So yesterday, this broke in the third hour of the show. Mike Trout was going to sign a 12-year extension worth $430 million.
Come on, Damon. Wake up.
$430 million over 12 years. And what is amazing is that when you really break this down per WAR, wins above replacement, or any other advanced metric that you want, any other stats you want, even though Mike Trout has not won even a playoff game, let alone a playoff series for the Angels, he is worth every penny. In fact, he signed this crazy deal worth more than $400 million, and most people are saying he's still underpaid. That's how remarkable he is. Mike Trout is LeBron James and Tom Brady without the winning. And that's hard for us in 2019 because he doesn't play on our TV constantly like Tom Brady does. Every Sunday, you're probably getting a Patriots game, whether it's the late window on CBS, Sunday night football, Monday night football, the playoffs, the Super Bowl. You're watching Tom Brady constantly in big games. Same with LeBron James. You've watched him in the NBA Finals for 8 straight years. You're watching him on TNT. You're watching him on ESPN. You're watching LeBron James. Mike Trout, in terms of individual greatness, is their equals. Except 7 years into his career, he's won no playoff games, no playoff series, plays on the West Coast in Los Angeles, but not for the Dodgers. And so this has buried him, totally buried him. And yet, $430 million, and he's still probably underpaid by based on just how great, historically great he is. I think it's great for the Angels to have locked him up. I think it's great for Angels fans that probably were always worried that he was going to go somewhere else. And I feel great for Angels fans that kept hearing, you're not good enough, you're not pretty enough. And then having Mike Trout bet on the Angels, I could only hope that with Shohei Ohtani and others, the Angels take advantage of Mike Trout and do finally get to a World Series and do win a championship, because it would be a crying shame if Mike Trout was this generation's Ernie Banks, except better. But let's also circle back to Bryce Harper. Because Bryce Harper and Scott Boras's entire angle, their marching orders, their MO this offseason, from the moment the season ended in late September for the Nationals and then late October for the baseball fiscal year, they wanted to be the highest paid player in baseball. That was it. That was the goal. They can dress it up however else they want to. Oh, we wanted to be in one city forever, blah, blah, blah. They wanted to be the highest paid player in baseball. How do I know that? Because they passed Giancarlo Stanton's deal by $5 million. $5 million. That might as well be $1 on the Price is Right. They got one more dollar, basically, on the open market than Giancarlo Stanton did, so that they could puff out their chest and Scott Boras can say, I got my client the biggest contract ever! And Bryce Harper can go back home and flaunt, I'm the highest paid player ever! But what did it take to get to 330? Because no other team wanted to go 330. The Dodgers were willing to go for 4 years. And perhaps the White Sox were able to get close to 300. But getting to 330, there was one team. The Giants weren't going to 330. The Nats weren't going to 330. One team finally broke, and it was the Phillies. And how did they get to 330? He had to go for 13 years. All right. We're going to keep spreading this out so our average per year is less and less. $330 million is wonderful for Bryce Harper, obviously. But over the course of 13 years, that only averages to $26 million. By the time this contract is done, my guess is there will be 30 to 40 players that make more than him per year. 13 years from now, $26 million isn't going to be worth a whole heck of a lot, crazily, in Major League Baseball. Now, you will say, well, he got the guarantee of guaranteed money and security late in his career, and that's true. But Bryce Harper getting $26 million per year, flattening out his per-year average, was just so he could get to that 330 number. I just got to make more than Giancarlo Stanton. And in doing so, again, the Phillies said, okay, but we've got to flatten this out to 13 full years and no trade clause, okay? Because he gives up plenty of freedom in this way by saying, well, I didn't want to go anywhere else. Yeah, well, in 5 years, if the Phillies stink, okay, you don't have to get traded. You can say, I don't want to get traded. But you've got no outs, in other words. Forget the no trade clause. You've got no outs. You've got no contractual outs here. You can't in 5 years say, this sucks, I'm out of here if we're losing. Which you know every player wants. Manny Machado got it. Giancarlo Stanton got it. Bryce Harper didn't want it. You can't tell me that. This was about the Phillies saying, okay, we'll give you 330, but you can't get an out. We can't be worried you're going to leave in 5 or 6 or 10 years. That was a team-friendly concession in this contract. He was the highest paid player by total contract for 18 days. 18 days. 18 days, because on average, Mike Trout's going to make $36 million a year over 12 years. He's going to make Bryce Harper $26 million over 13. If Bryce Harper was puffing out his chest about being the highest paid player in baseball, his contract looks bad by opening day. By opening day! Mike Trout will make $10 million more than him this season. I mean, come on! Mike Trout's going to make $10 million more this year than Bryce Harper. And this is such karma. It is such karma because Bryce Harper didn't desperately want to go to Philadelphia. He's trying to act like this, but he didn't. He wanted to go to L.A. He wanted to go to the Yankees. And this is karma because he's being called out as a fraud, as a phony. I actually like him as a player. I really do. I like his style of play. I like that he's got some attitude. I like his swagger and personality. When he gets hot, he's amazing to watch. When he won his MVP that season, a tremendous year. I actually like him, but I don't like phonies. I don't like PR spin in today's sports landscape because it's so inauthentic. And Scott Boras and Bryce Harper could never be honest and just say we wanted to make more than Giancarlo Stanton. It had to be about everything else. We wanted to be in one place forever. We wanted to show consistency. We wanted to play in this city or that. No, you didn't want to be a Philadelphia Philly. You wanted to be a Dodger or a Yankee, but they were going to cough up the money, and you were all about the most money. That was it. He could have went to the Dodgers for 4 years at $40 million per. That wasn't enough. He needed the total. And so this is what you got. You got your total, and it was your total for 18 days. 18 days. You could feel good about yourself. And in the meantime, you're hashtagging fanatics with PHs to endear yourself to the city. You're saying, I'm going to recruit Mike Trout twice publicly at your press conference, on the radio, even though that's tampering. Who cares? I'm going to recruit Mike Trout. You're walking up in your first at bat to the Fresh Prince of Bel-Air song. I'm real Philly. I'm Philly. No, you're not. You're a Vegas kid that wanted to be a Dodger or a Yankee. And again, I don't dislike Bryce Harper's game. I dislike phoniness. He is so trying too hard. He's the new kid in school and trying to do anything to be popular. And I got to say, Mraz, when Mike Trout signs within 18 days, really within, let's say, 14 days of Bryce Harper saying, I'm going to recruit you, that to me tells me not only was Bryce Harper full of it, but part of this could be that Mike Trout's going to stick it in Bryce Harper's face. I'm not here to follow you. I'm here to do my own thing, and I'm going to sign immediately to prove that.
How could you not feel that way when all we have heard for the past couple of years and been thrown in our faces Mike Trout's an Eagles season ticket holder. Mike Trout's Mr. Philly. When Mike Trout frees up, he's going to leave West Coast to go back to the East to
and
play
the
for the Phillies.
Financially had cleared out everything for that.
Right, right. They would have had gobs of money to give him. And the moment Bryce Harper signs, it puffs out his chest like he was going to be the one to bring Mike Trout in. Suddenly Mike Trout, 18 days later, can't wait to sign on the dotted line for more money to top Bryce Harper and stay out West. That all connects the dots for me. I think Bryce Harper has actually shafted the Phillies out of getting Mike Trout.
I would even say this. Even if Mike Trout didn't resent Bryce Harper for saying that, the Angels acted quicker because Bryce Harper said that.
Oh, for sure, because they had complained right away about the tampering.
Had Bryce Harper kept his mouth shut and not even mentioned recruiting Mike Trout or anything like that, not trying to be the popular guy in school, then I don't think there was as much agitation around the Angels franchise to get something done immediately. But if you've got 2 years of people talking about where Trout's going to go, and already it's starting because a player, the second biggest star in baseball, is talking about it, I think Artie Moreno and the Angels said, we've got to get something done right now. Had he kept his mouth shut, I don't think this extension happens.
Yeah, and that doesn't that also speak to two things? A, either the insecurities of Bryce Harper to like have to be fearful of the Philly fans to let you know it's going to be my job to get Mike Trout here.
Yeah, totally.
Or just the fact of how much pressure there is if you're a superstar signing a big contract in a place that will boo Santa Claus and throw batteries, that you better deliver on promises and be boisterous and make sure that you're the king of the town and going to, you know, change things.
Bryce Harper is totally insecure about going there. He totally is. He is fearful. He's fearful because he's already playing to the I'm Philly. I'm about Philly. Hashtag Philly. Let's play the Fresh Prince theme song. I'm even going to bring in your favorite guy. I'm going to get that guy. I'm going to work for that guy. He's like a politician. I'm going to work for you. Bryce Harper is so insecure that his own play is not going to be enough that he has to do everything else. And it screwed him. And again, that's why I've got to laugh at this. Because karmically, him being a phony came back to bite him. He didn't desperately want to be a Philly. He wanted to go where he could get the most money. That happened to be Philly. And the moment he signed the dotted line, he suddenly became a different superhero, a different wrestling character. And now, 18 days later, he looks like a fraud because he ain't getting Mike Trout. Sorry. And he never had a chance, clearly. I mean, if Mike Trout took 14 days to say, yeah, no, I'm not interested, clearly Bryce Harper never had any true influence over Mike Trout. When we come back here on the show, do you need playing experience to coach in March Madness? I've got a really interesting list for you coming up here next, and your thoughts on Trout and Harper at 855-212-4227. DA, CBS Sports Radio.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
The glitch in the simulation.
I always like wanted to have my face licked.
DA on CBS Sports Radio.
Same here.
Oh, okay.
25 minutes past the hour. Thanks for being with us, DA, with you here on CBS Sports Radio. You can always listen to the show across the great CBS Sports Radio network, all of our wonderful affiliates, also Sirius XM Channel 206, and on your phone, use the CBS Sports app, radio.com, or Apple Music. Our toll-free line brought to you by Geico. Great news. Quick way you could save money switching to Geico. Go to geico.com. 15 minutes, you could save 15% or more on car insurance. Rick is next up. He's in PA, listening on 590 to CBS Sports Radio. Good morning, Rick.
Hey, it's Monday.
Good. How you doing?
All right. Yeah, this Bryce Harper thing, the thing I can't figure out is his contract year, he hits 249. 2 years before that, he hits 243. And if you want to use advanced metric or whatever, his WAR was 1.31 year, and I mean, Manny Machado plays a bit more important position than he does, so I believe that, you know.
So you think that Bryce Harper is overrated? I understand that thought. Bryce Harper, he's got an attitude and a personality that might surpass his actual game. He's become a star because he's been really good on social media. because he likes to be young and cool and carry himself with a swagger. He's got an attitude, and that works well for brashness for young players or young people, perhaps, because baseball's so lacking that. They're lacking charisma and personality. In basketball, seemingly everybody's got a personality. In baseball, not so much. It's pretty bland and vanilla. So if you wanted to say that he's completely overrated because his persona is better than his play, I could hear that. I mean, he was a National League MVP. So he's obviously very good. He's only in his mid-20s, 26 years old. And when he gets hot, Bryce Harper's bat is staggering. It really is. I mean, when he goes on some of those tears for a month or a month and a half and he's just raking, he is elite. He's completely elite. But he'll never be Mike Trout. He'll never be this kind of metronome of greatness where every single year you know he's hitting 310, 31 home runs, 105 RBIs, gold glove outfielder. He's never going to be that. And so in that way, you're right. I mean, he's just not at that level, and certainly Manny Machado is a much better two-way player than Bryce Harper. Machado has his own problems, coaching-wise, bagging-wise, baggage-wise, effort-wise, but I just think that Bryce Harper, while to me an exciting player to watch, through all of this came off as a complete fraud, just a phony. And he's a phony with a PH. 855-212-4CBS. Twitter, DA on CBS. Really cool piece done by ESPN.com on the eve of March Madness. Of the athletic careers of all 68 college basketball coaches in the tournament. Now, my first inclination when I read through this was, well, you'll have the Chris Mullins at the top, the Bobby Hurleys at the top, but that there's got to be a couple of guys that didn't ever really play basketball. I just assumed that not every college basketball coach played basketball, especially at some type of decent level. And when I looked at this list, I found this fascinating. Almost every single coach of the 68 this year played basketball at some level. So there's nobody walking in that didn't have some type of playing career. And this is kind of amazing to me. If you look at this list, everybody played some level of basketball except for one guy, Bruce Pearl. Bruce Pearl at Auburn never played basketball in high school. He had an injury playing football his freshman year that prevented him from pursuing athletics. So I guess Bruce Pearl Mraz played freshman football, hurt his ankle, and then that was it. That's basically no athletic ability whatsoever.
No, although he was robbed of his high school athletic career, which I'm presuming.
Do we believe that you can get an ankle injury as a freshman and never play sports again?
Yeah, especially if his mom doesn't sign the permission slip.
Okay, all right. So he's the least accomplished athlete out of the 68 college coaches in the tournament. Scott Drew played on the JV team in high school. So I guess that's freshman, sophomore year. Does that count?
Yeah, well, and some of these kids know they're not going to get any playing time as juniors or seniors, so they stay playing on the JV team. I think that counts. You were in a locker room. You played.
All right. He's the Baylor head coach. Richard Pitino, Rick Pitino's son for the Golden Gophers. He served as a point guard in high school. He didn't play in college. He stopped in high school. Does that count as playing?
I think high school counts, yes. Bruce, high school is competitive.
Bruce Weber, K-State, played high school basketball through his senior year at John Marshall High in Milwaukee. Did not play in college at Wisconsin-Milwaukee. That counts?
Again, I think that totally counts. Just because you're not talented enough to play at the collegiate level, you have to be talented enough on the high school level.
Craig Smith, Utah State, played at the high school level, did not play collegiately. Same with John Becker for Vermont. Apparently, he was actually a good high school player at Fairfield, Connecticut. He had a 35-point game as a senior.
Wow. Made it rain.
Greg Gard for Wisconsin, a three-sport athlete in rural Livingston, Wisconsin. All right, I mean,
well, how many scouts go to rural Livingston? That's not his fault he didn't play collegiately.
You've got to get all the way to Mick Cronin at 59, and Mick Cronin played in college. Actually, I take that back. He played at high school, Cincinnati's LaSalle High. A knee injury forced him to end his career before college. Again, you can say you had a knee injury. Do we believe Mick Cronin had a knee injury and couldn't play? Or he wasn't good enough to play?
I think the knee injury played a part. Boy, oh, what's gotten into you, young man?
Tim Kraft at Gardner-Webb says that he could have played D3.
This is where it goes wrong.
He could have. But a partial scholarship he got for being the baseball manager forced him out of playing basketball.
That sounds like a lie. That sounds like a reach.
Yeah, right? I mean, you got a partial scholarship to be the baseball manager?
There is nothing worse than the guy you work with or friends with says, I could have played here, but this happened.
Let me throw this out at you. Buzz Williams played in high school at Texas. He said he could have made Bible College's roster across the country, but decided not to play at Navarro Junior College or Oklahoma City University. He says, I could have played at some Bible colleges. Do we believe that? That's, again, one of those, you got to take him on his word.
My guess is me and you probably could have played at some Bible colleges.
And then after that, all of these guys apparently played in college, either D3 or D2 or JUCO, meaning 56 or 57 of the 68 coaches played at the collegiate level or above. I find this amazing.
How is that amazing? They should be at that level.
Do you think that every coach in the NBA played any type of high-level basketball?
If they hadn't played at least high school basketball, I don't think they should be hired for that job.
Like, did Brad Stevens play high-level basketball?
I would assume Brad Stevens was some kind of shooting guard, at least on his high school team.
You believe he's a shooting guard?
Well, I mean, look at his size. He's not playing center.
Huh.
I think you have to play.
Didn't Eric Spoelstra not have any athletic experience?
Okay, again, he was a video technician nerd.
Right.
But I would think at some point that guy picked up a ball and dribbled it and didn't just get in there. As I said to you in the pre-show, you would have to be the kid who drew up the annexation of Puerto Rico in Little Giants to be worthy enough to coach and not have played. And by the way, this goes for female coaches as well. Becky Hammon, fantastic player in the WNBA, could transition to coaching. You have to have some experience in a locker room around a true team setting, not your peewee football team, to be able to coach and be the, you know, the face of coaching on your staff.
I don't know. I'm looking at Bill Belichick. He doesn't walk into a locker room and have any credibility because he played some type of football. I don't even know if he played high school football.
But that built the foundation. There's, of course Belichick played high school football. I didn't play high school football. I'm out. I can't coach. I know what's going on.
Are we sure Belichick played high school football?
He had to have. If not, he is the luckiest man on earth. How could anybody respect that man if he never put on the shoulder pads?
Okay, what about Adam Gase? Did Adam Gase play high school football?
Adam Gase, there's a theory out there that he did not.
A theory. There's a theory.
A theory out there. We cannot confirm
out
nor
where,
deny.
Sean? Where is this theory?
Out there.
Wikipedia. Wikipedia. So you can't trust Wikipedia's word. But at some point, if Gase didn't put on shoulder pads, he should be disqualified from coaching in the NFL.
What about all the fans think he's surprised he's got Adam Gase's eyes?
What about every general manager in baseball? These guys don't play.
General managers are different. They're up in a fancy box. They're crunching numbers on salary caps and luxury taxes and reading over analytics on what guys are worth. I'm talking about the grimy, rah-rah speech guy in that locker room, grabbing that clipboard from the assistant coach, drawing up plays. You have to have been in a locker room to get that respect as a player at some point, high school, college, or professionally. If you stop playing after eighth grade or only played CYO something, I'm sorry. That line of work is not for you.
Did Pete Carroll play high school football?
Oh, Pete Carroll played football. You bet your bottom dollar he did.
I bet my bottom dollar.
Yeah.
Pete Carroll's running around, what, as a cornerback?
Yes, he's thin. I'm sure he played somewhere, a D-back, a slot receiver. Pete Carroll played somewhere.
Because he was thin?
Because he's a football coach and he's thin, he played somewhere. Somewhere. You didn't play.
No.
I didn't play. We can sit here and analyze it, but there ain't no way we're walking into a locker room as the head coach and we have respect to those players. There's no way. You had to have been through the wars with them.
Matt LaFleur, do we have any idea if he ever played?
Matt LaFleur, I bet you, was a tight end somewhere. I don't care if it was Rockland Boulder College. Matt LaFleur played.
Belichick, by the way, played football and lacrosse in college and high school.
In college?
But at Wesleyan University, which is a really good school.
He's
but
the only guy on campus. It's mostly female students.
Right. I mean, he almost had to play, and I don't know that
it's like 85% female.
Right. When you start telling Wesleyan war stories in a football locker room, feel like those Browns might have tuned him out.
And maybe that's why it failed there, but then he had some experience and he moved on. 27 of the 30 Major League Baseball managers have managed in baseball.
27 of 30.
Yeah, I think 30 of 30 have managed in baseball.
Have played Major League Baseball.
Played Major League Baseball.
Yes, Major Leagues. We're not even talking about high school players.
So we're saying if you want to be a coach, you have to have played. If you want to be a GM, you could be a bookworm.
Right. GMs, you want to be in the library, not going to parties in high school, drinking the Natty Lights, fine. I don't care. Just figure out the salary cap. But if you want to get in that locker room and you know, nitty gritty, I'm going to coach this team. I'm not talking about the graduate assistant, you know, kid who might have been a dweeb who had some plays. I'm talking about you want to run a team, you better have played.
Roy Williams was a walk-on at UNC as a freshman. What does that count?
Yes. Was he in that locker room? Was he taking part in the shooting line pregame? Yeah.
So my 2 years of JV basketball allow me to coach in the NBA or college?
Yes. Bogus, okay. You could go coach the Sacramento Kings right now. I respect that.
Thank
you. I could not. I stopped playing basketball in the streets in fifth grade.
What about varsity baseball? Can I manage in the majors off of that?
Again, major's a little tougher. You have to be one of those three jobs.
I'll throw you one. Mark Trestman. There's no way Mark Trestman played any type of football.
You don't think Mark Trestman played quarterback in high school?
I don't, no.
Oh, I do, and I'm going to find this out during the break.
Okay. By the way, the most decorated college basketball coach of the tournament, Chris Mullin, College Basketball Hall of Famer, five-time NBA All-Star, and 92 Olympic Dream Team member. Johnny Dawkins, all-time leading scorer in Duke history at UCF. Bobby Hurley, one of the great college basketball point guards ever at Arizona State. When we come back, we've got your sound check, which includes Jody Mack addressing the wet sneeze.
Just to let you know before you toss here, Mark Trestman, 3 years as the Minnesota Gophers quarterback. Where's Robbie Rosenhaus for that?
Okay. All right. But you got to figure out where Adam Gase played, because I'm not buying that.
Good value. Big upside.
DA should have him do like some sort of eggnog challenge.
All right, get completely naked and we're going to dump the eggnog over your bald head and watch it drip down your face. This is the DA eggnog challenge. Can we drown this fat ass in eggnog in front of everybody at the Christmas party?
It's DA on CBS Sports Radio.
We're still trying to decide if there's going to be a women's bracket like there was last year, bracket challenge, which ended in death by salsa. Should we do that again? We're deciding whether or not to torture ourselves with a bracket challenge here on the show. Women's brackets start up on Friday, so we have a few days to figure this thing out. Catch every game, every shot, every second of March Madness, Thursday through Sunday on CBS and the Turner Networks, with coverage beginning at noon each day, Eastern, on CBS.
CBS Sports Spectacular, yeah!
March Madness.
Mario tweets, DA, Pete Carroll actually played corner at University of Pacific. Mike and Mason also sending me information about Pete Carroll's collegiate career. Ron tweets, DA, just so you know, Eric Spoelstra was actually the point guard on the court for Portland State when Hank Gathers died. All of this checks out. Pete Carroll played at Pacific. Eric Spoelstra was a college basketball player at University of Portland.
Huh.
Adriana tweets, Adam Gase didn't play, but he was the Red Bull supplier for the wild-eyed Wisconsin Willies.
That's just mean.
He's got Adam Gase's eyes.
You can't hide from Adam Gase's eyes.
So I thought this was interesting because ESPN.com did a really cool list of ranking the athletic careers of the 68 college basketball coaches in March Madness. So I did a little digging. Do you have to have any type of high-level athletic experience to be a coach? Doug Peterson played at Northeast Louisiana. Apparently he was a good player there. Matt Patricia, offensive lineman at RPI. Rensselaer Polytechnic Institute. Does that count?
Is that the same thing they were using at college basketball?
Well, it's the same acronym, the same initials, but it's not the same thing.
Gotcha.
One's a college, one's a metric.
I guess it counts. Pads were used, right?
Mm-hmm. Mike McCoy played at Long Beach State in Utah. I looked at Mike McCoy and said, did he ever play?
How is there a Long Beach in Utah? I'd love to see that ocean.
No, Long Beach State and Utah. He transferred.
Oh, that makes more sense.
Dirk Cutter played at Idaho State. I looked at Dirk Cutter and said, I don't know. So here's my question. Is it Mraz's theory that you've got to have the credibility of having once played for the players, or simply that the profession draws in people that love the sport so much that they desperately tried to play at some type of level? I mean, it's not hard to play high school basketball, let's face it.
But we all love the sport so much, and none of us are getting hired for those jobs.
But I didn't want to become a coach.
If I could coach a football team today, I would leave this job and coach it. But I'm not a candidate because I didn't play high school football.
But you didn't pursue coaching.
Because I didn't play, and I knew that job wasn't for me. They give those jobs to the players.
But don't you realize it's a chicken or the egg? If you were more into playing football, you would have been more driven to follow a coaching path.
I was into playing football, but I sucked. So therefore, coaching was out because I sucked at playing. And I'm sure there are plenty of fat slobs on couches across America that probably could draw up plays and run a team better, but they wouldn't have the respect of the locker room.
I don't think anybody, though, really, I don't think anybody in these locker rooms, let's say in college basketball, is respecting Bruce Pearl because he played high school football.
No, but he can relate.
They know that?
Yeah, I think when he sits down, he recruits the kids. He talks about his injury he had in high school. I'm sure it comes up.
The guy at Gardner-Webb is saying, hey, I was a manager on the baseball team. Come play basketball for me, and he has respect?
Now he has respect because he's since coached Gardner-Webb, but to get that job, I'm sure when he interviews for the job, you know, you're going up against 10 other potential coaches, and 9 of them have played, and you have it. Guess what? You're at the bottom of the list, bucko.
A guy says, I played on a small town high school basketball team. I can relate to you, and you're a big-time recruit. You're like, okay, yeah.
When you sit down and interview with whoever you're interviewing for, you think they don't run down your experience with the team?
And
are you going to be more experienced because you played some soccer games under a bridge at 10 p.m. with your buddies in your 20s? Or is the guy who was in the real locker room, you know, facing a big-time program in your high school division, you know, that guy going to get the job?
You're out at
that point.
I just think that there's a chicken or the egg thing here. It's a self-fulfilling prophecy that somebody who loves playing sports so much wants to go into coaching versus somebody that goes, I've got other things to do in my life. I'm not going to kill myself trying to play sports if I'm not good at them. Want to go become a coach?
Because it wasn't in their blood anymore, but it was in their blood because they played. I'm telling you, it's a whole thing. And enough with the chicken and the egg. We're having chicken and waffles now together. We could combine the two. That's such an old-fashioned saying.
I'm so confused. Let's get to your sound check.
CBS presents this program in color.
An educated person can't think he's going to get a recruit by strippers coming in.
They can fire you, but they can't eat you.
And they run through our ass like through a tin horn, man, and we could not stop them.
The audio you need to hear. It's DA Soundcheck.
St. John's was the last team into the NCAA tournament. Chris Mullin, does it matter?
The fact of the matter is it does not matter. So it's kind of quite factual. And, so it's a true new beginning. Number one, number 17, what is it, 16, 12, there's no advantage. You got to go out and play good basketball. You play good basketball, you move on, you don't, your season's over.
Number one is for the Hooves. Chris Mullin's talking like Mraz over here. It doesn't matter, obviously, because you're in the tournament, and now you're in the tournament. However, you're part of the first four, and so you've got to play one extra game by being the last team in, and I don't think that St. John's is going to win tonight's game by virtue of not being a very good basketball team. Le'Veon Bell on SI.com, whether he planned to sit out all of last year.
At first, I was literally just thinking, like, I want to play camp. It's camp and OTAs. I haven't went to camp or OTAs, so I'm just, like, preserving my body. I'm like, I'm not playing. But I'm just thinking, like, you know, when week one come, I'm going to come, but things kind of laid up the week one. So I'm like, okay, I'm not going to play week one. Things after even week one, you know what I'm saying? It's just kind of like certain buildup, so it's not making me feel comfortable. And then, you know, new information that came out that I feel like that was real important to me. I heard that I didn't even have to play to get credited. I mean, a credited season, but I didn't even have to play, and I wouldn't have to use another franchise tag on me. So that's when I got to the point, it's like, oh yeah, if I don't gotta come back, then I'm not gonna come back.
Okay, this is so obvious. Le'Veon Bell had no idea what was going on last year. And that's up to his agent, obviously, to explain to him what was going on. But from that explanation, Le'Veon Bell had no idea how the franchise tag worked, etc. And it shows because he didn't get more guaranteed money from the Jets by virtue of sitting out last year. Had he signed the original Pittsburgh Steelers offer and played last year under the franchise tag, he would have earned just as much as he got with the Jets, and then this year would have signed a new deal. So it didn't make financial sense to do what he did, and very evidently, they had no idea what was going on last year during negotiations. And he didn't have really a plan. It just kind of went along with it. Whatever. I mean, between Le'Veon Bell and Antonio Brown, those two guys, I just think, look like bozos. And Ben Roethlisberger has plenty of blame. Roethlisberger, I don't think, is the ultimate leader. And the Steelers organization has coddled him. But Le'Veon Bell and AB, I mean, I guess you could say that AB actually played it perfectly because he got his new contract. But I think both AB and Le'Veon ended up looking like bozos after the whole thing. So I went too long. And so we have to play the Jody Mack addressing the wet knees as soon as we come back from break. On Friday, Jody Mack addressed the Mack Attack montage when he hosted for me. So we will play that audio coming right off the top, I promise. DA, CBS Sports Radio.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.